Welcome to the club, man.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I live my life 1 mile at a time.
This is the worst day of my life.
The worst day of your life so far.
He's looking at you, kid.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
To infinity and beyond!
Welcome to episode 14 of the Heritage Film Club. Last time, Jared told us to all go and watch the 2017 thriller Wind River. Roll the trailer.
Sheriff's office.
I need emergency assistance.
What's your location?
The Wind River Indian Reservation.
I'm Jane Banner, FBI.
Welcome to Wyoming.
You by yourself?
It's just me.
That's Corey Lambert. He's the one who found the body.
This is a homicide.
I knew that girl. She's a fighter.
They have 6 officers to cover an area the size of Rhode Island. Maybe you can help.
Well, they know what the tracks say.
What is it that you do again?
I hunt predators.
So why don't you come hunt one for me then? Why would a teenage girl be out here? What is she running from?
You're looking for clues, but you're missing all the signs.
Shouldn't we wait for backup?
This isn't the land of backup, Jane. This is a land of you're on your own.
Watch the best!
Oh, my God. You won't get the answers you're looking for, no matter what you find. Why would your daughter run from home?
I don't know why. She didn't tell me.
Out here.
You cannot blink. Not ever.
This place. What it takes from us. What it took from you.
I got lucky.
Luck lives in the city.
Get your hand off that weapon!
Live out here.
Written and directed by Taylor Sheridan in his directorial debut, Wind River follows Corey Lambert, played by Jeremy Renner, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife officer and expert tracker who finds the dead body of an 18-year-old female on a Native American reservation in Wyoming. Teaming with FBI agent Jane Banner, played by Elizabeth Olsen, the two try to uncover what seems to be a mysterious murder. Haunted by his past, Lambert spares no time in trying to solve this case, hoping it may in turn solve his internal struggle. Taylor Sheridan, who previously starred as Deputy Chief of Police David Hale in Sons of Anarchy, also wrote Sicario and followed that up with Best Picture Oscar nominee Hell or High Water, for which he earned an Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay. Sheridan also wrote the sequel to Sicario and created the hit TV series Yellowstone. The budget for Wind River was $11 million and it grossed $45 million, has a runtime of 107 minutes, and Rotten Tomatoes gives it 88% from the critics and 90% from the audience. So, does that seem to track for you guys?
Yeah, I think it's a great movie, so I can understand the high scores.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, I think that follows.
What did you think, Clayton?
No, but yeah.
Okay, well, before we go any further, let's introduce ourselves because we didn't do that at the beginning. I'm Mike. With me are Brian.
Hi.
Jared.
Hello.
And Clayton.
Hello.
Cool. All right. So Wind River. Spoilers ahead. We're going to say that at the start of every episode because, if I remember, because we are not going to dance around anything. We're just going to go in and talk about the movie. So if you haven't watched the movie, pause, go watch it, come back, and join us as we talk about Wind River. All right. So, Jared, why'd you choose this movie?
There's a couple of reasons. So I want to try and choose movies that not everyone's seen and that worked perfectly this time because I was the only one who had watched it.
Totally.
Yep, I love a good thriller. I think this movie does it really well. There's a few scenes which I think do it perfectly, and I'm sure we'll talk about those scenes later in the podcast. Really well acted, and yeah, just that's why I chose it.
Is this a thriller?
It's a murder mystery thriller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so why? What did you think you'd class it as?
Take it you weren't thrilled.
No, I was not thrilled. I was not thrilled at all.
Were you bored?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, for the first three quarters of the movie, I was like, this is like watching paint dry.
Okay, can I take a guess where you stopped getting bored?
Yeah, where?
Where they go to the energy camp and...
Drill rig.
the rig and the shotgun... And the shootout and all that?
Yeah, sort of. It's the knock on the door and then that transition to the backstory.
Okay.
So and we'll then I was like, that's cool.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, cool. All right. I can see what you mean. It starts slow, and if this is not your normal sort of movie, I don't even think it starts slow, but it builds the story up, I guess. Yeah, okay.
I found it depressing.
Well, good. Someone died.
But like just depressing and just very boring. Like I get it's based on a true story. It was just very drawn out. And I'm like, oh.
So before we go further, it's not really based on a true story. It's based on actual events, but of a whole lot of different cases.
Okay.
And more of sort of a whole lot of different cases, not just one particular one. Like this exact thing didn't happen. As it is in the movie. So
that would tie into the end, you know, as the movie finishes, there's some dialogue that comes up on the screen.
So that
ties into that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end where it says there's no statistics kept on missing people in the Native American community or whatever it is. So, Brian, what do you think?
Polar opposite. I loved this movie. I wouldn't say I was engrossed right from the start. You know, when you get movies that start with some like a voiceover and something's happening and you don't really know what's going on because that's kind of the point. I thought, okay, so I'm watching it and then she's running through the snow, falls in, and she's reading out the poem, as you find out later, over the top of it. So they're watching it thinking, oh, okay. And then it cuts to that scene where there's the sheep and the wolves and then the wolf gets shot and I just sort of snap to attention.
It gave me such a fright.
Absolutely. And from that point right to the very end, I was focused.
Oh, man. If I'd seen that in the cinema, I would have jumped as well because everything is so pristine and white and silent.
Yeah.
And you're just watching these sheep. You see the wolf. It looks like a nature documentary.
Yeah.
And then, that wolf gets killed.
And then almost the next thing you see is that he's dragging it through the snow, and it's not like a massive blood trail, but there's red on the snow.
Yeah.
You have my attention now.
Doesn't that happen in the God of War game, the latest one? Same sort of thing with the rabbit in the cutscene, and he gets shot.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I've seen that replayed online. So it reminds me of that.
Crossing platforms. Yeah. And from there, and then it was just the characters pick up. I mean, it's not even that it's a slow burn. It's just, it's quite a considered movie and it introduces the characters and there's no massive shock elements. Well, not a lot of them, but you know, it just sort of builds and builds and builds. And then it obviously really kicks up again at the end where there's a shootout and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I was in right from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good way to say it. It was a considered movie. Yeah. It was, everything was there for a reason and needed to be there. There wasn't any waste or, not anything I would consider boring, but yeah, it took its time to build the story to get you sort of a little bit invested. Like it didn't even tell you Jeremy Renner's story off the bat. It was literally he's just out hunting. Then you meet his ex-wife and his kid, and then he has to go to the reservation to check out a lion attack on a steer. And then it all sort of starts unfolding from there when he discovers the body in the snow.
Yeah, and I like a movie that kind of rewards a second watch as well. I went back the day after I'd watched it and just picked through some scenes. I just wanted to watch some things again. And the scene where, you know, he's walking through the snow and looking for the lion, and he comes across the girl, runs toward her, and I was much more aware of his panic when he finds her, and it made sense to me because you know that he's in his brain, he's thinking it's my daughter, you know, because it reminds him of all of that and all of these things. It's on a second watch, you pick up these things. And I really like the movies that do that. You know, either if your memory's good and mine obviously isn't, you can work your way backwards through it while you're watching it and go, oh, that's what that was. Second watch, I picked up those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think in that scene, like, I think they were trying to pay attention to details of what he would actually do. I think if you see he's placing his feet in the footsteps in the snow, I guess, to not make a second pair of tracks. But as he gets closer, he sort of just stumbles and runs towards the body.
Yeah, because at that point he's lost that calmness and all of that, and his emotional brain's taken over. And then you see the point at which he looks at her and he gets close, and then he kind of snaps back into it. He makes the call for, you know, the authorities and all of that, and he's back into he's the hunter.
Yeah, and I think it's not knowing how the story plays out and not knowing his character's story about his daughter and everything.
Yep.
It's almost kind of strange how he breaks down when he finds the body.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, well, you know, I mean, yeah, it's pretty daunting to find a dead body in the snow. But he sort of gets really emotional about it.
Yeah.
And then obviously that makes sense later on.
Yeah,
but
hindsight, that's not what it was about, yeah.
And then you realize that he knows the girl as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think was I just really slow? Because I didn't even pick up on that until pretty much the end when he sees the photos on the wall that his daughter and the other girl were best friends. I was like, I didn't even think about that. It's just that's typical Mike.
Yeah, it drops into dialogue a couple of times, but because it's so natural, that's not signposted.
Yeah.
And so it's there to be heard if you hear it kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. So that's either us or me not paying attention, or something that, like you said, is something you pick up on the next go around as well.
Because
obviously then you'd know it anyway, so you'd probably pick up those dialogue cues.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to say, Gil Birmingham, who's in a lot of movies, he played the father of the dead girl, the Native American guy, is awesome, man.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked him in this movie. Yeah. I also really liked Graham Greene, the guy who plays the Native American police, sheriff.
Reservation police, Ben. Yeah.
I really like him as well, and was really sad when he got taken out, actually. But I think, jumping a bit, but Gil Birmingham does a really just great job. Like, when Elizabeth Olsen first comes in as FBI agent Jane Banner, she comes in as an FBI agent.
She's kind of rude. Yeah.
Yeah, not as a person. She's coming in as an agent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not respecting that she's in sort of a different world than she might normally be in, I guess, is probably a bad way to say it. But and she sort of just treats it like really cold. And while she's in his house, and when she stumbles into the room, and they sort of warn her not to go in the room where the mother is. And the mother's cutting herself out of pain from losing her daughter. And that's pretty painful scene to watch. And then she comes out and sort of breaks down a little bit. And when the father, Gil Birmingham, the actor, Martin, as his name is, when he goes out to talk to Jeremy Renner, and it cuts back inside the house, and you just hear him howling from the pain of, like, he's broken down to the character of Corey Lambert. And
that bit was really difficult.
Yeah, and you sort of like, oh, this is the guy he's safe with to let out those emotions. But it's so raw, man.
Yeah.
It's just a real howl. And it's just like that pain is real, man. Like, I don't know. It's just...
So he spends that whole time when she's in there and she's being...
As a tough guy.
You know, and it's not even... I'm not even sure that's being tough. It's just repressed anger.
Yeah, yeah.
Repressed everything. Yeah. And then... when Corey turns up, Sandy goes out to talk to him on the porch, and that beginning to end from when she comes and knocks on the door, and Corey Lambert's telling him about his chat with the counselor and all of that, you know, take the pain. That's absolutely my favorite scene, start to finish. But to see,
it's a great scene.
Gil Birmingham, the way the father, the way he goes from the one to the other, and it's it's just a great piece of acting.
When he's talking about,
you just see,
where he's talking about not avoiding the pain or not pushing it away and just embracing it and accepting it and living with it. And it's like, that's a really good piece of writing. I felt like, it was very powerful, man. And it just worked really well for that scene. And it was,
I think Jeremy Renner acted that really well. It's probably the best I've seen him act.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I said that on the Hurt Locker, that that movie really turned me around on Jeremy Renner. I like Avengers and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the least used Avenger. So you can't really judge him on those movies, even though he's fine in them. And Hurt Locker was the movie where I went, damn, man, I really like this dude. And this movie just cemented it. He is so, so good in this movie.
You can see the pain as well in him from losing his daughter.
Yeah, he does it really well. He's a good actor.
Yeah, I think there's lots of scenes in here where I think in other movies it would have been, like I was saying before, the whole thing felt considered to me. That was kind of the word I could think of, where a lot of movies would do the scene like that on out on the porch, or the one where he's in his house and he's talking to Jane and just explaining about his daughter.
That's really
good. And
it would
have been really overblown, and it's easy just to dial it up. But all of that, you can see the whole time, he's used to, it feels like the character, he's the hunter, and so he's always calm and he's always measured and always steady. And so even when he breaks, he doesn't break a lot.
True.
And it's, I think that was why it was more affecting in the bit where his voice stumbles when he's out on the porch and talking to the father. I think that really got to me, because you're thinking it's really difficult for his character to be doing that and then break, and then he's back in and then he's going hunting.
And you totally buy him. It really does show how good he is, because you really completely buy into this as a real guy.
Mm.
And his little nuances just seem completely natural. And you just, you just wholeheartedly buy into him as this character. Mm. And on a similar note, in that scene you were talking about where he tells us, or he tells Elizabeth Olsen's character, the story of what happened to his daughter, and her reaction. She's the stoic FBI agent while she's listening.
Mm.
But then she says, can you point me to your bathroom?
Yeah.
And then as soon as she gets in there, she breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool too. And I feel like,
well done.
I feel like I've been sleeping on Elizabeth Olsen, man, because I just never really cared either way. Like, I never disliked her, and I never really liked her. I was just okay. And again, even in the Avengers movies, but since WandaVision, I've just really loved her. And so I'm glad this movie was the one that came up now. And she's really good too in this movie. Everyone in this movie just plays their parts well.
Yeah,
it's good when an actor gets to do something like this. I mean, obviously we all love the Avengers franchise, but that's not the movie where you get to do your best acting.
Correct.
Yep.
Getting her in something like this really shows off what she can do.
Hmm.
Yeah, especially when you're just one of those more secondary type characters. I mean, it's different if you're, say, Chris Evans, or even to a point Chris Hemsworth, because he does a lot of different stuff in those movies. But yeah, to be to show off what you can really do, like your range. Yeah, it's the sort of movie, and both of those guys just knock it out of the park in this movie.
Also, I think talking about that scene where he's sort of explaining what happened to his daughter, I'm glad they didn't try and force a romance into it. A lot of movies easily could have done that there, but they didn't, which is nice. It's absolutely unnecessary for the movie. Wouldn't have added anything.
Brilliant. Totally. And did you feel on your first watching, I guess not this watching, but maybe Brian or Clayton, did you feel like it was very close to potentially going that way ever?
I kind of felt like it was teetering on the edge a little bit.
Yeah.
Because not that I felt necessarily that they were setting it up, but I thought, well, if they're going to do it, this is the point at which they're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they didn't. And I was really relieved. And even at the end in the hospital room and all that kind of thing, you could look at it and say, you know, they could have Hollywooded it. Hard to say at the end of it, but no, it's just the whole arc is what it is. Yeah,
I thought they were getting very close in that hospital scene at the end as well, and I'm glad they sort of cut it off before that happened, because it
would have been inappropriate too, because she's in bits by that point.
She's in bits
emotionally, you know. She's really kind of breaking.
Yeah, and anyway, it's never going to work because she'll be off on her FBI cases, and she's not going to stay in Wyoming, and he's going to be always out on the snowfields or whatever.
Hunting lion.
Yeah, which never paid off. Man, I thought...
Well, he found
there
them.
There was no lion.
There was a lion. He found them.
Found them in the hole.
Yeah, but, like, it didn't really pay off. It was the big one.
No, yeah, and I thought for a minute that that's how they were going to dispose of the bad guy. He was just going to sort of have the lion take care of him. But then the way they did it was so much better.
Yeah, what did you guys think about the whole revenge scene?
It was awesome.
The way he handled the killer.
Yes, like we're gonna let you die the same way you let that girl die.
No, he didn't even say that. He said,
"No, but you can go." Yeah, but in essence, you sort of knew that he was gonna run, and because of the way that they were explaining how the lungs flew, the lungs sort of froze and then built up with fluid, you sort of knew that was coming. Yeah, and I was just like, "That's awesome."
I thought it was really satisfying. It's an awful thing to say, but it's really satisfying to watch that.
It really was. And I think it was for Corey Lambert's character too, because it sort of resolves that murder, but also gives him a little bit of maybe closure on his own one. Because he's, even though he hasn't sort of rectified what happened to his daughter, it's sort of, in a way, it's a win, I guess.
Yeah. And then the scene.
You can do, yeah.
I was going to say, then the scene also, is it Martin, the Native American father, at the end where he's got the face painted?
Yeah, that's a great scene.
And he's like, one got away, and he's like, nah, they didn't get away. I was like, yeah, that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. Because I like when, and jumping forward again, because we'll talk about the shootout soon, but when Elizabeth Olsen is, I think, back in his cabin, maybe, or in one of those trailers, probably on the rig, and she goes, "Go and get him." And he said, "You know, if I get him, I'm not bringing him back." Mm-hmm. And she says, "Go get him." And I was like, "Oh, that's so brilliant!" I watched that scene over again, like three times, because it was just so good.
I think that the actor who played Pete did a great job of being just like the most horrible human being you can think of.
Dude, seriously,
he was an asshole, man.
He was perfectly cast. Yep. Like, just the look of him and everything.
From the get-go, when he entered the room drunk, you hated him. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you're terrible, mate.
Completely.
Yeah. And that scene, the rape scene.
That was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Harrowing. Yeah. It was so terrible because you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And you just had to watch it unfold and knowing what was going to end. And, man... What made it worse was how good the actress played it, and it made it so much worse because, you know, he basically knocks her out and she's lying on the bed, so then he decides to take advantage while everyone else is holding back John Bernthal's character. And you only see it from sort of where her head is, and you see her head start moving back and forth, and you're like, oh, man, that's terrible. But then you see her eyes open, and then you see her in her eyes. You see the realization that she's figuring out what's going on as her brain unfogs, and it's just it's terrible. That really was a scene that just was sort of gut-wrenching to watch. And every time I thought about it after the movie, I was just like, man, it's like sort of like, yeah, it's really hard to watch. And it's the one thing that would make me lower the score, but not because it's a bad thing to have in the movie, but because it would make it a little less rewatchable for me, because I wouldn't want to skip over the scene because it's integral to the story. It's not thrown in there gratuitously, but it would, you know, it always, when you go to watch it, you'll be like, oh, that scene's coming up.
This one's coming up. Sort of. Yeah. And even watching it, because you know, something horrible are going to happen, you know, and it has to, and you know, it's coming, and you've got to, you watch it anyway. You know, I thought the way that they set it up, and as you say, the way that she acted it, was brilliant, because it really, in that you've only seen her running in the snow.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
It's the only time that you've seen her, and then she's dead in the snow. And even just in that tiny few minutes, you know, she's established the character, and you care, as you should, but they just set it up really, really well.
I did like the whole fake out with the boyfriend actually being like a decent guy.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know why that was cool though? Because John Bernthal, up until The Punisher, usually plays the dick character.
Yeah.
And I think he was sort of the rapey guy in Sicario.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was extremely entertaining, but the dick guy in Wolf of Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was the dick guy in Walking Dead. And so then, yeah, when it did that really awesome cutscene that Clayton was talking about, when Elizabeth Olsen knocks on the door, then John Bernthal opens it, but it's suddenly a flashback.
Mm-hmm.
It's so well done. Yeah. And then I saw John Bernthal, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, now I can see why he was the guy who killed her. And total fake out, like you said. It was so good, and I was so pleased, because finally he can be the decent guy, like, and he's totally not the Punisher, because he gets the crap kicked out of him in this movie
over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And he's like the biggest dude there, but you know, power and numbers and all that.
Yeah. And then you're right, Clayton, because the Pete is just so much worse. He's so horrible. It makes everything that came before it so much worse as well.
Yeah.
And then that payoff at the end.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ugh. And just the way Jeremy Renner's delivering it to him too is like, I'm going to give you the same chance you gave her.
Hmm.
You're going to run to the highway. He's like, where's the highway? Because they're up on the top of this mountain.
8 miles that way.
Yeah.
And then they're like, there's such strong like difference in how far he ran compared to her.
Yeah, but he calls it exactly, because he says like, she ran 6 miles in the snow with bare feet. You probably won't make it
60 feet.
Yeah. And he literally makes it nowhere. He stumbles almost immediately, but you know, he also started off, she was beaten up when she started.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as him probably, but it was extremely satisfying, like you guys said. But Clayton, talk some more, give us your thoughts. Did you write a list of rambling thoughts for this
one? No, not this one. I sort of just watched it as I went along, but I mean, up until the scene where the door opens, it was sort of just meh.
What about
Yeah.
Just before that, one of my favorite scenes was just before that, when they're walking to the trailer and the guy's like, oh, why are you flanking me?
That was cool.
Big, like, Mexican standoff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was good.
And then it picked up from there. I found the movie picked up from there to the very end. So, yeah, that's why I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that flank scene was good, because he freaks out of nowhere, man. Like, because you don't even realize what's happening. And he just starts spinning out about, like, what are you guys doing? You're flanking me. You've got one on each side of me. And, you know, he just starts freaking out. And it's like, what's happening? And then you suddenly realize that, oh, yeah, this is going to go poorly.
And he was right, too. At the end,
he was so right. Yeah.
But he died.
Yeah, speaking of that, do you guys know? I looked it up. Body count. Have you got your guesses?
Yeah, I looked it up. So sorry. So I won't guess.
Anyone else?
I wasn't sure.
10?
Who was dead and who wasn't? I mean, it's kind of, I thought it was.
You can assume everyone in that scene was dead except for the guy who got away and Elizabeth Olsen.
And Jane, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure. I suppose we count.
10 for the whole movie?
Six maybe?
You got to count Natalie as
No, sorry. There's Natalie, that's right, because there's the guys who work at the rig. Yeah, I guess probably 10, 12 maybe?
15.
Really?
Yeah, there was also the druggy guys. There was the one that got shot by Jane.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great scene as well.
Did you not like that scene, Clayton?
I was okay, but...
Dude, when she busts into the druggy house and then unloads a clip in that dude, and Then the other guys escape out the back, and Jeremy Renner, all cool and slow, just walks up with the snow shovel and smack. And then when that shot when he kicks him in the face, the drug dealer guy is trying to sit up. Mm. The low shot looking up at him, and his boot just comes down into the camera. Oh, so good.
I like the fact that the brother and the father made amends at the end, sort of. Yeah, well, a beginning sort of, yeah. of amends.
Mm. You know, like it was a beginning. I like that it wasn't like a...
Not tied off at the
tidy. Mm. Yeah. Also, part of that scene I liked at the end was when Jeremy Renner, or Corey Lambert, sorry, he goes outside to see Martin, and he's there with his face paint, looking very Native American. And Jeremy Renner sits down and goes, "What's with the paint?" And he goes, "It's my death mask." And he goes, "How do you know?" And he goes, "I don't." Yeah. He goes, "I just made it up because no one's here to teach me." And it was just great because it was so well acted, and it sort of really broke his character a bit from being this very staunch Native American guy to what he was at the end. And yeah, I really liked that.
Do you know where this was filmed?
On Wind River Reservation.
Oh, it's like a true reservation, because it was lovely scenery, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It looked great.
It was beautiful.
And, you know, there's that old adage in Hollywood that says, never work with children or animals. I'd like to submit that you should throw snow in there, because that must be a bitch to film in. Sorry for the language.
I know Elizabeth Olsen, she had snow blindness during the filming.
And what's snow blindness?
I guess it's just probably that the sun reflecting off the snow.
Yes, yeah, so you get temporary blindness from the glare off the snow.
Crazy.
And John Bernthal, he lost 4 toenails.
Yeah.
What?
Really?
From the cold.
Wow.
I also read that.
But that wasn't the contract.
Yeah, I also read that. Ah, they grow back. I read that the weather conditions in the movie were the actual weather conditions that were happening, and they were just filming as it
came.
That's
cool.
And they had to. Maybe Jared can correct me, but they had to take all the equipment on snowmobiles and stuff to the locations and then try and tidy up the snow, and they had to use a bit of post-production to get it looking, as they say, virgin snow.
Yeah.
Because it's so pristine out there, and nobody's supposed to have been out there, so it would look really crap.
Yeah.
You had all these footprints and
tracks and everything everywhere. I like the bit at the beginning, you know, where she comes to the – to the house. You see Jane for the first time, and it's snowing, you know, it's a storm, basically. They're saying, you know, it's going to get worse and we've got to go out. And then they go out in the snowmobiles and the sun's out.
Yeah.
You know, it's all nice and clear. And looking at saying, storm will be back. Mm-hmm. I went, well, these are the conditions. Yeah, this is your environment kind of thing. And I thought that kind of, that took me back a little bit.
And after reading that, I thought maybe they were just literally commenting on what was actually happening. Because she says, like, it was a blizzard a minute ago, and now it's sunny. And he's like, it's coming back. But I thought you were going to talk about the scene before that when Elizabeth Olsen, Jane Banner, we've got to stop using the actors' names, when Jane Banner rolls up to the rears for the first time and her car just stops.
Yeah.
And the sheriff guy is like, what's she doing? And Renner's like, Corey Lambert is like, she can't see the road.
Yeah.
She's right there. It's so close.
Yeah,
and that's how bad the blizzard is.
Follow me up kind of thing.
Because obviously this movie, it just highlights how bleak and horrible life is on these Indian reservations. Taylor Sheridan, if you look what he calls it, I think it's the American Frontier Trilogy, this, Sicario, and Hell or High Water. Right. They're all like the most bleak places in America. Like Sicario's right on that Mexico border. Then going into Juarez, the like drug capital of Mexico, where it's just gunshots every night. Hell or High Water is just in these poor, dying Texas towns. I think that's just sort of the theme that he wants to portray in his movies, just these bleak and horrible places to live.
Yeah.
But
from living conditions, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I've seen Hell or High Water, and there is a scene in there where they're robbing the bank across the road from a diner. Basically, the people in the diner are looking out the window and watching it.
Yeah.
They're watching the bank get robbed because, you know,
I don't know if you've heard, but he does have a new movie coming out that he's writing and directing. It's called Those Who Wish Me Dead. I've got a short sort of plot summary. teenage murder witness finds himself pursued by twin assassins in the Montana wilderness, with a survival expert tasked with protecting him, and a forest fire threatening to consume them all. It seems quite on point for Taylor Sheridan.
Not a man who makes cheery movies.
No, and
but makes awesome movies.
Yeah, and so that's got Angelina Jolie.
Okay, I'm out.
Nicholas Holt, John Bernthal again, and Aidan Gillen.
Brilliant. So John Bernthal was this director's guy.
Yeah.
Every director has a guy or a girl, and John Bernthal says, but he needs to get eventually the main part in one of these movies.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the bit player anymore, man. Everyone knows him, so step up.
And Fantastic Punisher.
A Fantastic Punisher. Feel like we should sort of maybe say that we don't really know what reservations are like, so we shouldn't say they're a shit place to live.
No, but they shit, but I think it's a hard place to live. It's not.
Yeah, I think the conditions make it hard.
People who want to live. Yeah.
But it's so beautiful, though.
Yeah, right? I like Elizabeth Olsen's comment, Jane Banner's comment, where she says, did someone forget to tell you it was spring? Mm-hmm. And they're all in their big, jackets and stuff. And it's really good. It does a lot of good commentary on just life, I guess.
Yeah, I like that kind of thing. I mean, even the idea of things like Sicario, where, there's a drug trade, and you can say for a movie like this, you can say, well, how could you be unhappy? You live in a place like this. And I'm thinking, well, you can't eat snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as easy as that.
There'll be people
in society who would go, well, why don't you just leave? Well, yeah, it's not that easy either.
They even talk about it, saying that some of the young guys look forward to going to prison because they've got like a warm bed, hot meals at the time.
Yeah.
Just shows what it's like living in a place like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing none of us have talked about yet, especially because we did touch on the shootout, was how good and how taken by surprise were you, but how good did it look when the dude shot the shotgun through the door and Jane Banner just went flying back through the air?
Yeah.
The same thing happened with the sniper rifle shots.
Oh, that was so good.
Yeah.
Yes. When Jane's about to get ended and, she's scrambling for any last ditch attempt to save her own life. And then just out of nowhere, it's like the wolf at the start. Just bang, squib goes off, dude goes down.
Yeah.
And picks them all off.
I figured that was a callback to that because, what we were saying, when the wolf gets shot and you don't see it because camera doesn't pan to Corey and you can see the gun, from the mm-hmm. first shot. And even when there's the shootout, thinking, well, he's called Ben and so he can see them for all mm-hmm. of that. And then you're going, man, where is he? And they get shot, but again, you don't see the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all total surprise. You're as surprised as they are.
Yeah, there's no apart from the fact he came down from the mountain, there's no setup to mm-hmm. them about to get shot. It just happens as it should. Mm-hmm. And it's so perfectly. For this guy directing his first movie, man, this is a win.
It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? Yeah.
Man, that scene as well, there's a cool shot. Maybe I'm just a sucker for aerial shots, but when they decide to drive out to the rig
mm-hmm.
and the camera, it's a helicopter shot, obviously, comes up over the mountains.
Yeah.
And then it just shows these nice white plains and then goes back down to the road where this convoy of police are heading up to the rig. Oh, it's just such a really beautiful shot as it comes over those mountains. And it's, oh, man. But for a first movie, damn, he needs to direct more stuff. So.
Okay. I guess none of it happens really quickly because I think they even make the point at one stage where they say, we need to drive 50 miles to go 5 miles. And I thought that was a pretty cool way to put it. And then they follow it up with the shot to show it around, it's not, nothing happens quickly here. It's all really daunting distances and it's difficult, 6 miles in the snow, right?
Yeah, they do it really well. And I was, I said it at the beginning in my intro, but I was shocked because I was looking up Taylor Sheridan because I know he had written Sicario and I wanted to see if he had anything coming up, like Jared pointed out. And that was the first time I realized that he was the deputy from Sons of Anarchy in the early seasons. Back when Clayton was still watching before they spoiler kill Opie and he bailed out. And he was the dick policeman in that show, but really that's only because we're on the bad guy side. He's actually the good policeman who's trying to do his job and keep his down safe. So to find out that that was him, and then so he can act, then he goes and writes these movies like Sicario, which are awesome, and then comes and directs and writes this movie. It's just, dude can do a lot of stuff.
And it seems like he's getting noticed because from what I read, so Sicario, Hell or High Water, they were written on spec. So
they were,
movies hadn't been bought, I guess, before he wrote the scripts, but this one did. Mm-hmm. Already had the idea. They said, yeah, go ahead, make it. So yeah, I guess he's another movie coming out. He's got Yellowstone as well. So
he's moving up. I want to watch that. Mm. And now here's a funny thing I read was that, and I'm so glad that we ended up with Jeremy Renner because he was the first choice, but then he got delayed on another movie.
It was Arrival.
On Arrival, that's right. And so then they've got Chris Pine, which I'm still not a big Chris Pine fan. I love Wonder Woman movies. And I quite like those Star Treks too, because I'm not a big Trekkie from back in the day. But I'm just not plussed on him, I guess. And so I'm glad that he got tied up on Wonder Woman and Jeremy Renner became free again so they could get him back into this role. Because like we said before, after watching this, I don't think, not just Chris Pine, but I don't think anyone could have really played it the same way.
Chris Pine, he did do a very good job in Hell or High Water. He's one of the leads in that, and he's great in that. But I think, Jeremy Renner was perfect in this.
Yeah, I think
I'll still watch Hell or High Water.
Yeah, they both cast well. I mean, he's the right actor for that one.
Mm-hmm.
For mine, I thought, I'm not a massive Chris Pine fan either, like, to be honest. But yeah, I thought they got it right for both.
See, in saying that, not that we're talking about that movie, but I like that Jack Ryan movie he was in, but that doesn't mean I particularly liked him. But yeah, cool. So, all right. So that was a pretty good chat. Does anyone have anything else to say about Wind River other than it was freaking amazing? We haven't heard enough from Clayton, man.
Oh, no, I said what I needed to say. Has anybody actually rode a snowmobile before?
No, but did you want to after watching this movie?
Yeah, because that scene, you know, when they're heading out to the oil rig or the power company or whatever it is, and he stops and then he hops off and he hops on the snowmobile, he is boosting that around the forest and taking some mean corners. And I'm like, can you really do that on a snowmobile, or is this just some movie magic?
It's like he was doing it.
Jane even makes the comment about it saying, can we not go 100 miles per hour on the snowmobile tomorrow?
And then he goes, if you want to end up in a ditch we can't get out of, I'm sure, because obviously it's skimming across
there. He was blasting it all around. I was like, that looks so much fun.
Yes, the movie's on. Yeah. He's on one leg at one point, I think, isn't he? Just trying to
It's like I'm already cool because I'm riding this snowmobile across these pristine plains, and it looks awesome with these aerial shots and all this crap.
In a white suit.
It's like, how can I make it look cooler? Oh, I know. I'm gonna bring one leg off and like ride it just on one side of the snowmobile. I was like, yeah, you're cool, we get it. I was like, dude, but I have to say, in that scene we were talking about before, just before I forget, when Jane Banner is about to potentially get killed because all the police have been wiped out in the shootout and it's just the power company guys, and then, you know, the sniper shots start happening and Ren is taking out the guys one by one. I literally said, and forgive the language, but I literally yelled out at the TV, fucking Hawkeye. It's like, dude. I was like, yeah. I was so wrapped. I was like, dude, not to typecast him, but that was amazing.
He can shoot anything.
Dude, I was like, who needs it? Why would you use an arrow after that? Like, because, and that's the cool thing too. He's using this gun, which usually has lower pressure ballistics because of the type of gun it is. And that's why it's cool when it shows him making his own ammunition, because he's making higher velocity rounds or higher pressure rounds. And man, when they hit those guys, you can tell because they just rip through those guys. And it's not gratuitous.
No, there's the guy inside the trailer who's like just waiting and waiting, pops up at the window and just gets blasted straight away as soon as he pops up. Yeah. That was great. Yeah, like, you know, Corey's just waiting at that window, just waiting to see the guy pop up.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hawkeye, yeah. Man. Yeah.
It's the hunter again. It's just the patience, right?
Yeah.
It's like you wait and wait and wait, shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's similar to Hurt Locker, where he was playing the sniper who just had to wait and wait and wait and wait for the shot.
Yeah.
And again, not to typecast him, but he's excellent in both movies.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen Hurt Locker, go watch that and then go listen to episode one of our show where we talk about the Hurt Locker and how awesome Jeremy Renner is in it. Cool. Right, so...
Has he in the Kate Winslet tier yet for this podcast?
He's getting there. Oh, geez.
Almost as many mentions as Elijah Wood, so that's a start.
Did anybody else think that... the main character, Corey, and his ex-wife, Uma, should get back together?
No.
Never
crossed my mind.
In their interactions, I was like, oh, I hope they get back together, but they didn't.
It's sad because she seemed just angry at him at the beginning. You're like, okay, they just, because you don't know the story, you're like, okay, well, they obviously just divorced on bad terms or whatever. But then when you find out what's happened, it's like, oh, she's just,
angry at life.
Angry at life. And
I guess she's probably blaming him as well. I mean, he asked her to come up to stay with him.
Yeah, yeah,
it might not be irrational anger, but she's still going to feel that.
Yeah, that's right. And
I know, but I wanted them to come back together.
I figured that was just a way of looking at it that it's all different. You know, like in the speech when he's on the porch and he says, well, the counselor says you'll never be the same. And if you think about it, you know, he sort of settles back into that, you know, calm, almost never breaks. She's, the ex-wife is clearly angry. Martin, when Jane goes to the house, he's angry and then he breaks and his wife is in the bedroom and she's cutting herself. It's like four different responses to effectively the same thing. You know, otherwise if it was, again, if you want to get really cookie cutter about it, just everybody would be the same, you know?
Yeah, and until you said that, the four different views or whatever of how someone handles the grief, I was thinking the one scene you could do without in this movie is when Jane Banner walks into the room and sees the mother cutting herself.
Keep that in. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was just like...
They kind of bring it full circle at the end when she's just like lying in bed asleep and with all
she's
the...
She's found peace.
I thought that was a nice little tie-off as well, as much as the war paint. It's just that... You know, she's just up there. She's sleeping in the room, in her daughter's room, you know?
Yeah, she's found her peace. She's had her resolution.
And I think you have to do something at that because Jane sort of gets her view broken steadily through the whole thing. And I think that was that's the shocker for her. You know, you can't just go in and talk to the victim's mother.
True.
And you see her, and she's just leans against the wall and she's kind of hollowed out at that point. I thought that was important for her.
And that's why I don't write movies. See?
Me either.
Yeah, well, all right. Have we said all we want to say?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to hear what some people on our Twitter said?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay. It's a mixed bag. Not in terms of it's a good movie or a bad movie. I'll read all the comments because it's a mixed bag. So, @YourResidentNerds said... another great Taylor Sheridan movie. That guy seriously knows how to knock a film out of the park. I think apart from Clayton, we can all agree on that one. Trainwreck Theater said, I've never even heard of this movie. And then a facepalm emoji. So
makes sense, though.
We didn't either.
In fairness, Jared, I think you mentioned it to me ages ago, and I'd never heard of it.
Yep.
Yeah, never, not a whisper.
I will say one thing is that, Jared, this is your second pick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you picked Heavenly Creatures the first time, and now you've picked this movie.
Yeah.
Both of them were on my got to get round to watching list.
Yeah.
And I never got round to, Heavenly Creatures rewatching. And because you've picked them, it forced them to the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And, man, I'm so happy with your choices so far.
No pressure for the next one, then.
No pressure for the next one, yeah. I'll email you a list of my to-watch movies and see if it's on there. Yeah. Okay, so what else? The Scotch and Sports podcast, our friends over there, they said, thoughts on the movie? Solid movie. I like to think of it as Hawkeye and Wanda solve a murder.
I can see that, yep.
I can see Hawkeye, definitely, as I said. All right, and lastly, the Barking Bard pod said, it's a movie that I will randomly think about out of the blue and my heart will ache a little bit. leaves a lasting impression for sure. Hope you all enjoy it. And that goes back to what I was saying, especially about the rape scene. Mm-hmm. It just, it is heavy every time I think about it. And it comes down to the performances more than just the subject matter. It comes down to the direction of that scene. And I will shout out, even though we are uneducated on this sort of thing, but the cinematography in this movie was brilliant.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. It's such a good looking movie. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So last thing we have to do then before we go on to what our next movie will be is we'll do a quick round of out of two possible thumbs. How many thumbs do you give this movie? Jared picked it. Yeah. You go first.
Two thumbs.
Cool. And Brian?
Two, absolutely.
And Clayton?
One.
Going to drag the score down. Oh, no. One. That's more than I thought.
Okay. Yeah, one. It's a movie. Go watch it if you haven't seen it.
No, okay. Clayton, have we kind of talked you into a one? It didn't feel like a one at the beginning.
No. As I said on the previous podcast, I mean, if I hate a movie, I'm going to give it a zero. Everything else falls within the one category unless it's like completely batshit awesome, like thank you for smoking. And then that was a two, like yes, up there. So yeah, I enjoyed bits of it. It's a one.
So Clayton doesn't do half thumbs.
No, I do not.
I want to give it a two, but like I said before, that scene is just so like harrowing for me that it will always make me just stop and think like, do I want to sit and watch this movie knowing that that's in it and not wanting to skip through any other movie? So I'm going to give it a solid 1.5 because I don't want to be funny and start doing 3/4 and stuff. Yeah. But it's an extremely high
strong
1.5.
Strong 1.5.
Right. Yeah. Brinking, okay. Like on the brink of a 2. And it's not because, again, that's a bad scene. It's just so well done that it just breaks my heart to watch it, and it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so that's good. So that's what, 6.5? Did I get that right this time? I'm bad at maths.
Yeah, 6.5 out of 8.
Yeah, that's not bad. Mm. That's pretty good. So we'll work that into a percentage score and post that up on our social media. And with that, we can roll into what our next pick is going to be. And we swapped it around. It was going to be my pick, but Clayton thought that since our next episode will drop on Valentine's Day, and I feel like I'm setting this up to be for a twist, but he thought he had a movie that would be relevant, and I'm just waiting for this. So what is your pick for our next movie?
So I'll just give you a pretense, right? So you know how it was coming up Valentine's Day. I wanted to pick a movie that potentially was, one, for our female audience. Two, if you've got a loved one, you can sit and snuggle and watch it with them. So, you know, two birds, one stone.
I'm waiting for the twist.
So, fellas, we are going to 2012. The year that gave us The Life of Pi, The Dictator, Skyfall, and some other movies.
Yeah, probably.
Some other
more
movies.
Than just three that year.
Yeah.
It was not a COVID year.
Brian, are you still listening?
I'm hanging by a thread here, my friend.
Good. Because I'm about to introduce Dick into your life. Not just one dick, many dicks swinging around all up in your face. We are doing the 2012 cult classic Magic Mike.
Oh, no.
Clayton, you bastard.
Oh, no. Well,
this is for the ladies.
But they're not watching it. We are.
They'll listen to the podcast and watch it. And if you've got a partner, watch it with them. And then you get those brownie points after the movie finishes.
At least you didn't pick the sequel. Win. The sequel is, yes, I've watched both of them. The sequel is just.
Hold up, you've watched this?
I've watched both. I have a wife.
Oh, yeah, you've got a wife. Okay.
And cool. I appreciate a good looking man as much as the next woman does. Oh, gee.
Part of this movie was because you, like, yonks ago in our podcast, you brought up how Channing Tatum is an awesome actor after 21
Jump Street. Did I say awesome actor?
And I was like,
I wouldn't have said
Oh, he's been in some other stuff too.
he's been in a lot of stuff, dude. You could have chosen Step Up.
Nah, I needed to bring something back for the females.
Okay, just I'd like to point out, I don't think I ever said he was an awesome actor. I do like him, and I enjoy watching his movies. Not so much Magic Mike, but yeah, okay.
Brian, have you seen it?
You really need an answer to that question.
I do. I was surprised Mike's seen it, but then he's got a wife, so I get it. Have you seen it?
No.
Jared,
no,
have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
Hey, Jared, watch it with your lady partner. There you go.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that.
But it has got the guy, I butcher his name every time, Joe Manganiello. Well, I can't remember how to say his name. The guy who played Deathstroke in the end credits of that terrible, terrible...
You've got 2 weeks to practice the name then.
Mm. Yeah, Justice League. Was it Justice League that was in, or was it Batman vs. Superman? No, I'm pretty sure it was Justice League.
Batman vs. Superman.
Nah, because that ends with Jesse Eisenberg getting his head shaved.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I think it was the end of Justice League, and it set up nothing because that movie sucked and nobody wanted to touch it.
I like topic. Justice League.
A little bit off topic. Oh, you're, go away. You're fired.
Thank wow. you. What, you couldn't have fired him before you picked the movie?
Yeah, right.
You're still watching Magic Mike.
I know. I'm sitting here wondering if I can make my review shorter than the one I did for Team America.
You never know. Hey, don't judge a movie before you've seen it, mate.
This is true. This is why we're here.
Right.
I've never seen it. I just assumed it's just a bunch of strippers. So oh,
you've never seen it either.
No, why would I watch it?
I think it's got that pony song. Pretty sure you must like that.
Oh, Genuine.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay. All right. Well, good. So we will all go away and watch Magic Mike. Such fun. And we will come back in 2 weeks to discuss Magic Mike.
For the ladies.
For the ladies. And all the guys who are listening. Hey, man, there could be male fans of this movie. There probably
oh, yeah,
are.
Who enjoy male strippers. Yeah, okay, cool.
Dude, it's got a story.
Has it?
It's got, yeah, and it's got a credible director, too, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. My expectation's really low, so...
Keep those expectations.
You did minimal research on this movie before you picked it, Clayton. I'm feeling
he did it as a rib. Sure.
No, I made a list of movies that I have seen, I haven't seen, and this is on the pile that I haven't seen.
Well, at least I could probably watch this one with my wife again. So there we go. Okay. So until we come back, go and watch Magic Mike, so you can come back and listen to us talk about how much we love it, and follow us on social media. We are on Instagram and Facebook. At Heritage Film Pod, or you can just type in the Heritage Film Club on Facebook and it'll come up. We are also on Twitter now at Heritage Film Pod, so go and follow us there. We'll put up some facts and tidbits and things like that from this movie, and we will do something with Magic Mike. Cool. And we have also, if you're on Spotify, the Heritage Film Club playlist, where we feature songs, and if it's a movie that doesn't have songs, score tracks into one big playlist from all the movies we cover. So you'll have a nice sort of soundtrack of the pod to listen to if you so desire. And that is it, I believe. That's all our plugs. So join us back in 2 weeks. Next week, Brian and I will be back with a brand new The Rambling Geek podcast. So join us for that. Until then, see you in 2 weeks with Magic Mike, and we are out.
That's the end. Thanks for listening.